All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
And I hear the first officer call out. And the first officer jumps on the radio and he screams, "Holy sh**, it's the goat man." And I mean, it just like everything went quiet. And I could hear the ringing in my ears and I could feel my heart race. And so I hit my lights and I went flying up there.
I've been told by some older people, elders, that you grab them and you hold them and you don't own them, but you hold them there until daylight. If you can hold them or pull them into the light, it destroys anything they have, any kind of power or anything that, or anything they were trying to do to you, it'll destroy them.
This guy was like bouncing, like, you know, like how you see people kind of getting ready to jig, you know how they kind of bounce? Yeah, he was like that way. He was just kind of bouncing, and he was just kind of going back and forth from one foot to the other. And he just kind of turned sideways, and he turned back over to the other way, and he took off. Holy shit, he jumped in Wanda.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Lodge Tales, and I'm your host, Rod Williamson. This episode we have Sean Klen from Sean Klen Shadow Productions, and he's our first Diné or Navajo guest that I've had on the show so far. He knows a lot about, you know, skinwalkers, because I feel that there's a lot of misconceptions surrounding these skinwalkers, and if you've ever wondered what they are, how they came to be, why they came to be, or can they be helped, he answers all these questions in this episode here. We also go on to talk about thunder beings. Why do spirits come out at night? We talk about like the strange things that happen at ceremonies. Spirituality in general. Ghost hunting and, you know, using sage and things like that. We also talk a little bit about possession too. So this episode has a lot of good stuff in it. And I'm really thankful for Sean Klen coming on and being a guest on the show and, you know, be willing to take time out of his busy schedule to share with us. So I was really honored to have him on, and I really appreciate his stories. I have to make another disclaimer, because my dog, I can hear him making noise in the background on all of these podcasts, and I'm sorry for it. I'm half tempted to just run him off when I'm doing these, because if he's not licking that bone or just making smacking sounds or sighing really deeply in the background, he'll bark every now and again, and I have to edit those out. But I'd be busy all night trying to edit him, so I don't even bother anymore. Also, this sound of machinery in the background that's always on my videos, it's a water pressure enhancer or regulator or something. It puts more pressure in the lines from the house. So I'm sorry, I can't stop that. I can't get it off. And this is the quietest place at my house that I have to record, is out in my little man cave I got going here. So just sorry for all that. And I appreciate you guys bearing with me here. So this conversation was really interesting. I had a lot of my own questions answered in this one. And if he ever makes it, he said he might make time to come up to Montana. That'd be really interesting. Then we could get more content out for you guys, because I would, of course, share it with you guys, whatever we did. And so without any more messing around here, let's get right into the show.
Yate she Sean Klen Yidashi, a shehin the shler, auto billigana bushin. Glasha Adashate, auto billigana Adashan Adashanola. So I am Dene. I come from the Navajo Nation, and I guess you can say I've had my fair share of paranormal experiences growing up on the reservation and everything. I grew up on a border town, kind of going back and forth to the reservation where my mother and my grandmother were raised. And being Native American, I'm pretty sure all you listeners out there understand, like, going to ceremony from pretty much birth to present now, wherever you are in your life, you know, you kind of experience the paranormal, you kind of experience spiritual beings and deities throughout your life and everything. And so I am not a medicine man, I am not a guardian, but I was a helper for a good many years throughout my upbringing in my life. And I did see a lot of skinwalkers while I was helping out my my brother. And I guess you could say even outside of helping my brother too, just being on the Navajo Nation on the res over there. So, yeah, so it was like one of those things, you know, you go to ceremony and everything. And sometimes when I was a little kid, I used to see like the medicine men have to go outside and chase away skinwalkers or Yangloshis and everything. But yeah, so one of my first experiences that I actually had was I was a young boy and I was getting kind of introduced to a lot of helping out my brother and my uncle as far as for spiritual duties and ceremonies and everything.
Yeah.
So it was pretty crazy because it's funny because like if you talk to anybody like on the Navajo Nation, whenever they talk about skinwalkers or Yanagloshis, the story always starts out with one time at my great grandma's house or one time at my grandma's house. It's one of those things, you know. So, but my great grandmother's place up there, you kind of used to have a lot of those jumping the skins, running around and everything. And so she used to always tell us, you know, when we were younger, to always try to go to sleep before when the sun goes down. Don't be up at night because that's when the spirits kind of run around and everything. They can take you away. They can do all these things to you. So, you know, you got to be reverent and respectful of the beings of the night kind of thing. Hmm. So sometimes my great-grandma, she never had electricity or running water.
Mm-hmm.
So she had like an outhouse outside. So sometimes, you know, when we were little kids, we would have to go out. It was about like 50, 60 yards away from the house. And so it would be like 10 o'clock at night. It'd be like really cold outside and everything. And so we were little kids. I would have to use the restroom. My mom would be like, tell my older brother to go with me and everything. And I was like, okay. So him and I would just go out there. And sometimes you would start hearing like whistles. You would start hearing like people call out to you and everything. And then you'd be in the restroom. My brother would be like, hurry up. We got to go back inside. So you can't even use the restroom in peace out there, you know. But yeah, man, it's kind of more so the stories of the skinwalker and everything. You know, it's one of those things to where like a lot of people have different stories of the origins of where they come from. But how I was told was a long time ago, there was a ceremony that was used to be able to traverse land really fast. And so on the Navajo Nation, we had four sacred mountains that pretty much outlined the border of the nation.
Hmm.
So the medicinal people used to travel to those mountains within 4 days, and then the spirit people taught them how to transform into these animals to be able to traverse the land really, really quickly. But somewhere along the line, somewhere along all that, evil was introduced to be able to start teaching people how to do it the evil way. Because when you learn how to do it the good way, it takes a long, long time to be able to learn how to do that. And from what I know, there's a couple people out there in the Navajo Nation that still know how to do it the good way, but they're very, very old. And they kind of keep to themselves and they don't really talk about it. But I do know of a couple people that do it today. So evil came along to try to teach people how to do it through the evil way. It'd be a lot quicker, so you would have to do certain bad things to be able to gain certain power. I guess you could say it's like borrowed power, so from evil and everything. So you would have to make sacrifices. You would have to you know, do all sorts of morbid things to the body that you sacrifice of the loved one that's really close to you. And so then you would have to go out and get your skin, whether that be through a buckskin, coyote skin. And those were the two animals that were really kind of prevalent in the Navajo Nation at the time. There were other ones too, but those ones were, easier to get at the time. So then there would be like a lot of darker, evil things that you would have to do to the kill that you got to be able to make the skin how it is, mark it up, do all these other different things with it. And it's just like through that ceremony, you learn how to shapeshift like that. But to be able to learn how to do that through that way, I guess you're in a constant state of owing the evil, because that power that you use is of your own. It's borrowed power from someone else. So you always have to do evil things. You always have to do certain things to be able to appease and borrow more power, everything from the evil being. So I guess that's why, like, a lot of people, one of those questions I always get is like, what's the reasoning behind it? Why do people turn bad? Why do people do skinwalker stuff and everything? And I guess you could say it's a lot of people get dealt a bad hand in life, man. It's a lot of times, you know, their family or their is broken and drugs are involved, alcoholism, and, you know, or there's a lot of orphans out there too. And they long for that love. They long for that familyness, that bond. And sometimes, you know, evil will come along and be like, I can give you a family. I can give you all this stuff. All you have to do is just do these certain things for me and you can have that. And so, you know, there's certain circumstances like that. And there's just people that are out there that are just pure evil. And they just want to do it just for, kind of like I always think of the Joker. Yeah. Sometimes some people just want to see the world burn, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah, so it's one of those situations that a lot of people in the reservations don't live on the reservations don't understand. You know, the hardships of everyday life and, you know, not having power, not having electricity, and still going through that generational trauma of, like, boarding schools. You know, our ceremony is barely becoming legal in 1973. Mm-hmm. You know, American Indian Movement, all that stuff, you know. My mom, my grandparents, my uncles and everything, all those guys were in that time of rebelling and just fighting for the right to be alive, fighting for the right to do our ceremonies. And so, you know, there's a lot of that generational trauma that's kind of out there, and some people handle it better than others. So, you know, it's one of those things that people that don't live on the reservation don't understand. So that's more so like the origins. That's more so the reasonings why these beings do what they do. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say, like, these beings are more so on the Navajo Nation in my videos, or kind of nearby, is because I let people know that there are other tribes, other beings, other races, other religions do have shapeshifters. It's just the Yanagloshi and Skinwalker come more so originally from the Navajo Nation. It's just a specific shapeshifter, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, because in our tribe, like I was saying earlier, we don't have those. We don't have a type of, how I look at it, is a bad medicine man or woman, you know,
mm-hmm.
that does that in a way like that. That's not to say there's not bad medicine that does go around. That's not to say that. But as far as having this, you know, their prevalent thing is to jump in the skin of an animal and travel and do all these bad deeds, you know, because they're basically mm-hmm. a slave, from my understanding of what you just said. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in my tribe to you know, be the same as that, I guess I would say.
That's good.
Yeah, it is, you know, because I'm from the Blackfeet tribe, and yeah. our ways are really, you know, all native ways are really similar in that. See, one thing I'd like people to realize too is it's all about life force balance. and transformation is like the old ways, right? It's always about that. So like when you pray, what are you doing when you pray? What's happening? Well, your life force, your spirit is going out and it's touching another one, wherever you're directing those prayers toward, to transform that person into a better version of themselves. Yeah. So the body can follow their spirit. You know, and that's what happens when we all pray and we're always doing these ceremonies. That's why they're so powerful. And a lot of the elders will tell you, you know, you don't think bad thoughts when you come in here. You leave you leave that at the door. You come in here and you got to pray for even your enemies. You got to, you know, if they were to be in that same ceremony, you got to leave that alone because of that life force that goes. You don't want to harm somebody that way. You know, you always want to kind of protect them and bless them. So with a lot of this, how I look at it and how I understand it with the Skinwalker is that they're using a life force too, but in a really bad way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how they work and everything. And it's very sad. And that's one thing is like when we were doing our trainings and everything to protect ourselves with it, it's, you know, I was always taught those teachings too. It's like never pray against anybody. Never pray against, you know, evil like that. Pray for them, not against them. You know, pray that they come around to their senses and they come back to the holy ways again. And, you know, and so it's just one of those things that, like, you know, unfortunately, sometimes these younger ones that are going through that hard time, the parents didn't teach them that, you know. And then especially with these younger generations, you know, it seems like, you know, a lot of those teachings are being lost, especially with COVID that just happened too. One of my grandfathers was a part of a Medicine Man Association. And unfortunately, a lot of a good handful of medicinal people passed away from COVID. And unfortunately, a lot of their ceremonies didn't get passed on. So, you know, just that's like one of the main things with my channel is I try to teach those basic understandings of love and compassion. And, you know, the more that you fear that these beings, you know, the more power that they get. So don't fear them, you know, pray for them, you know, hope and pray that they can get through this. Don't fight with fists, fight with love and prayer, you know. You sometimes you might have to use a fist and everything, but just say you're sorry, you love them after. But
can you mention your channel to everybody so they know who, you know, where to find you?
Yeah, for sure. So I am, my YouTube is Sean Clint Shadow Productions. So you can find me there and on Instagram at official Sean Clint SSP. So that's where I kind of do like some paranormal teachings of my own experiences I've gone through, my travels and things, and the lessons I learned from those experiences. So hopefully, like, somebody out there in the world who didn't get those teachings from their parents or they're not connected in that way, you know, can use that information to be able to help them. And if they ever do run into beings like that. And I also just do like normal videos, like I want to be able to make movies in the future too, music videos and stuff like that. Just more so happy side of things. You know, you always got to have a balance of darkness and happiness in your life.
Yeah. And that's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, I just got into this podcasting, what was about a year and some change ago, and I never really thought about the media side of anything, really, you know. But since I started doing it, I like it. I like doing this kind of stuff. And, geez, I don't know if I'd ever get up to the level of making a movie, but but you're doing pretty good with all that. I mean, I watch your videos all the time, and if anybody hasn't seen him, please go check out his YouTube channel. It's really good, man. It's really good. He talks a lot about these paranormal things, and especially like my draw to him was the Skinwalker part of it. Because I didn't, you know, we don't really know what those are in my tribe, but he does a really good explanation of all of them, like you just did earlier. But in his videos, you can get more there too as well. So yeah. Do you have any personal experiences with those skinwalkers that you'd care to share?
Yeah. So this one's kind of like a little dark, but this was during a ceremony of somebody over in northern Arizona. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the videos that's on my channel and everything. But pretty much they had a shed that was very, very evil. I guess you could say there's evil objects inside of it. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say I was a good couple of years within my trainings with being a medicine man helper at the time. And it was pretty gnarly because when we went into that shed and we started taking all the items out of there, you know, I didn't really tell this inside of the video and everything, but when they were taking items of the darker, I guess you could say, pieces inside of those old 50s chests inside of the shed there, they, once they started opening them up and they started grabbing them and putting them inside of their medicine bags, just to make sure that the evil energy didn't run around everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they told me to stay outside because I wasn't trained enough to be able to handle that evil energy just in case if it jumped on me and stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I was out there, I just remember hearing footsteps all around, and then I started seeing shadow silhouettes kind of walking around in that area. And then I started hearing whispers. It's like it just of men, women, and just started hearing all that stuff. And when it comes to the Yanagloshi or the Skinwalker, they carry around these crystals along their belts to help them transform and be able to see, like, within a home and to be able to witch people more remotely from a distance and stuff. So, but when they wear those crystals, in the moonlight, the stars and everything up in the sky, they kind of tell on evil where it's at, so they make them flicker. So you can kind of see red flickers in the darkness. So that's when I knew that those things were kind of around. So unfortunately, there was a Skinwalker regalia inside of that shed that was there. And so we gathered up the Skinwalker regalia, the skin, the antlers, and everything. And then so we performed a ceremony to be able to release the spirit of the buck, to be able to go back to do whatever it wants to do, you know, against whoever killed it in malicious ways and all that stuff. And so when we ran that ceremony, those beings came even closer and they didn't want the ceremony to go. So they tried to scare us off, but we didn't get scared. Mm-hmm. So we continued on the ceremony. And then once the ceremony was almost done, you see them run toward the canyons and everything. And so once the ceremony was done, you see a big old gust of wind go against the fire. And then that's when you felt like the spirit of the buck go toward the direction of where they ran. And then you hear one of those skinwalkers scream and everything off in the distance. So these beings can be physical, but more so they're more so spiritual. Not a lot of people these days, I guess you can say, do jump in the skins because it's just not worth it to be able to do that. Plus, you know, back in the day, it was a lot easier to be able to, you know, have for someone go missing. But it still happens today, but not as much as back in the past. So, you know, if you're ever run into a Yanagloshi or a Skinwalker and you see them, you know, more than likely it's going to be a spiritual being.
Whoa. Dang, I didn't know that. I thought they were all, like, physical people just doing bad medicine. So they're spirits as well, huh?
Mm-hmm. The ones that, I guess you can say, didn't pay their debts. They ended up dying, but even in the spiritual world, they still have to pay their debts.
Man, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, I heard you talking, too, about those thunder beings. You know, our tribe has a really good relationship with the thunder as well. You know, we have thunder pipes, thunder bundles, mm-hmm. and things like that. And one thing that you say that always kind of resonates with me in your videos is they're really powerful beings. You don't mess with them. And that's how we are too. Same way, we don't mess with them. But we're happy that, you know, when we hear him coming, you know, because when the first thunder comes, that's when all the thunder bundles get open, the thunder pipes get smoked and everything. And that medicine comes directly from the thunder itself, himself.
Yeah.
You know, that spirit that's there. And, you know, a lot of the times, what we call them is thunder men or thunder women, usually a thunder man. There's an old story about when this woman was trying to set up one of her Okans or a Sundance where she wasn't supposed to, and that Thunderman was telling her, hey, look, you can't do that. It's got to be in this area. And she just goes on with it. That Thunderman warned her. And when she was doing her ceremony that summer, she was actually struck and killed. But dang, she was the only one out of that whole... Because there was a bunch of them in that lodge, but she was the only one to die from that. She got killed that day because the thunder told her to move that, to not have it there.
Yeah.
And she went ahead and disobeyed and went against what the thunder was saying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are stories we have, too, with those beings. And every time I talk to somebody about it, you know, they always say the same thing, you know. You know, really be careful around, you know, the thunder and those thunder beings. You got to really be careful. But on the flip side of that, the thunder in our way is afraid of the raven, or we call the raven the cold maker. Because when the cold comes, that's when the thunder has to head out and go south.
Mm-hmm.
But another interesting thing about our stories of the thunder is his lodge is all made of rocks. It's a rock lodge. That's where he lives in there, yeah.
Mm. See, I love hearing, like, other tribes' stories about these beings and everything, because it's just, like, it's so interesting to hear, you know, their experiences, their stories and everything. So, you know, whenever I go up to Montana, I'll probably meet you in person, and then we can probably do a video together and share some stories.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, there's a lot of times, I mean, like, I just got done coming from the Sundance not too long ago, and... You know, we call it the Okan, but that's where we just came from. And man, I know all of us folks that like doing these paranormal YouTube podcasts, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are all present there at that Okan, we sat up and told ghost stories for a long time, like a couple nights in a row. And it was nice. And I was wishing, geez, I just know these other folks that do this stuff would just be in heaven right here, you know, because you hear so many different ones you've never heard. Like, I was listening to stories about a horseman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him to come on my podcast to talk about that story about when him and his brother-in-law seen that horseman.
Yeah.
But, you know, whoever hears of those kinds of stories, you know, like, they come out, though, when you're all sitting around late at night at encampments and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's pretty awesome because... my grandfather was adopted into a Shields family up in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were invited to go to a Sundance out there over in Rosebud.
Yeah.
So we were going there ever since I was a little kid. And so I remember this one time we were sitting by the fire and everything. And it was at nighttime. And so, like, we were getting ready to dance the next morning and everyone went to sleep. And so I became good friends with one of the kids that was sons of the fire chief.
Mm-hmm.
So him and I were just kind of talking and just exchanging stories and everything, because he's Apache.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting at the fire, and I would have to say it was about like 11 or 12 at night. It was just him and I. And so while we're sitting there telling stories out in the distance, you know, it's kind of like in a nearer ravine where there's like some trees there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so behind the trees, we heard a wagon going through, and we were just like, is that a wagon? You know, kind of you hear the old wooden wheels going through. And then where it was a campsite. There was people sleeping there. So there was no way a wagon can kind of go through there. And so you kind of hear a horse walking through and everything. And then not too long after, the chief kind of comes up and everything. And then I asked him, I was just like, do you hear that? He's just like, yeah, you guys need to go to bed. I'll go ahead and watch the fire and everything. He says, like, especially during ceremony time like this, you know, at nighttime, the spirits do their ceremonies too. So you got to be reverent. You guys got to go to sleep when, just kind of like how my grandma, great grandma used to tell those stories too. When it gets dark time, you know, you got to let the spirits do their thing. And especially during ceremony time too, the spirits are doing their thing at night. So he's just, I remember as a kid, I was like one of the most, like, it's not the first, but it was definitely one of those, like, I was, my brain was more developed, and I was just like, oh, this is, like, not making sense. Like, I hear a wagon going through here and everything, but there's no way a wagon could be here. Just, like, you know, just experiencing something like that, you know, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that reminds me of a story. So this happened to me a while back. That, as a matter of fact, that same area where we're having that Sundance, not too far from there, there was this house, and that's where my one of my relations was having some holy doings there one night, and he was painting people's faces. Well, my brother-in-law and I were sitting outside in the car. My wife was in there, and everybody was there, you know, and I remember, well, I had some reasons I didn't want to go in there just yet, you know, but a guy kept coming out. Hey, come on now, they need you guys in there, come on, and we just kept sitting there, and finally, my brother-in-law and I, we got out, and we walked onto the porch, and he come out again. He says, come in now, you guys, come in, they're about ready, you know, and so he goes in, and I finally just stand there, and I'm thinking to myself, heck, I don't know if I want to, you know, participate this time around. Yeah. And I'm just standing there, and I'm staring up at the sky, and it's just quiet, man. Like, everybody's in there. All the cars are parked outside, and it's just quiet, and it's kind of this big porch, like a patio. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, I don't know how to describe it, because there was no source to the light, but it just got light all of a sudden. Like, I could see at night, but it had this green hue, like how you look in night vision goggles. That's how it looked.
Yeah. Wow.
But I looked around, and I could see so far, man. I could see, like, it was daylight. I looked up in those coolies. I could see everywhere. And so it stayed on for a while, too. So I looked to see I don't know where it's coming from. I'm looking for the source of the light, and I can't see it. There isn't a source to it. It's like almost like the sky itself was a light bulb and just turned on. Because there was no source. It came from everywhere. And when I look down at the cars, because I'm looking at their shadows to see where they're casting a light from, yeah. And the shadows of the cars are all directly under it, like at a 45-degree angle coming all the way under it. They're not on the sides, you know, like in the evening when a shadow casts on the side of the car. Not like that. They're all directly under it. And yeah. I'm standing there staring at all this, wondering what the heck's going on here? And just like that, it blinks off, and it's dark again. And I'm staring up at the, kind of toward the north. I'm looking up that way, and I said, all right, you know, because I took it as those spirits telling me, hey, it's okay, just go ahead and go in. It's all right. And so I was telling this story to the guy who was running that ceremony. And this was just about 2 weeks before the Sundance this year. He called us to his house, and he was speaking to me and my wife. And, you know, before we got down to business, I told him this story. I told him what I seen. And he says, you know what? He says, that's that sight that those spirits have. And he was saying the same thing you just said. He said, at night is their time. At night's when they do their ceremonies, when they have their ways are at night. He said, and what I think you saw that night was they gave you their sight for a minute just to see it. He said, because during the daytime, he says, they could like be under rocks. Anywhere where there's shadows is where they'll kind of hide out. And at night, they all walk around freely and they do their thing at night.
Yeah, we what's interesting is we have stories like that too, is that like I always get asked questions like, why do spirits come out at night, you know, to like a lot of non-indigenous people, and we would ask, I would tell them, because it's hard for them to see during the day, because the sun is really bright, and so the sun god is like, he's very, very powerful, so it's kind of hard for them to see. So when it goes down, you know, we say like in English, they have that spirit vision too, to where they can kind of see like it's brighter than a full moon out there and everything. So that's really interesting that you say that, because we also have stories like that too.
Yeah, that was a really weird time, you know, because I never experienced anything like that in my life up to that point, and haven't since. And, you know, I got curious. I looked for things on Google, like, you know, natural phenomenon like that. There's nothing out there. I didn't ever find anything.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. It's just like I mentioned earlier, is like when you go to ceremony, sometimes, you know, you experience these things, and it's just like, you know, you're just standing there like, no one will ever believe me what I just witnessed, you know?
Yeah. I got another one for you. My I've told this one before, and people that listen to my podcast, they know this story, but I'll tell you. So my dad was outside of a sweat lodge, my uncle's sweat lodge, and he was outside sitting there with this boy. This boy must have been about 10. And he was just watching the fire and the rocks. So when they, in between rounds, they would call for more rocks, and that's what they'd bring them in there with a pitchfork and put them in that pit. And so this is what they were doing that day. But as they were sitting there during one of those rounds that were on, the door was closed, and they're just sitting on this big stump, like a big stump, you know. It would have took about three men just to move it, get it up, and then start rolling it off would be a little easier. But just to get it up, there were about three big men to do that. Well, it's an old one because they use it for a chopping block, and it'd been there a long time. So they're sitting on this, and just then they call for the rocks to be put back in, because they go back into the round and it's that time. So they get up and they're putting them back in there, the rocks. Everybody went back in and they're bringing the rocks in, and the door closes again. So they go to sit back down, and here that stump's all the way up on that hill. But just before all this happened, that boy was saying, you believe in any of this stuff? My dad just looked at him. He said, yeah, it's real. It's real. I don't know if I do. But anyways, as he seen that stump on top of that hill, his mouth was just hanging open. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. Like, how did that happen in that time we got up? There's no way that could have happened.
Gee,
my dad told him, he says, no, they're just showing you that they're real. It's like, they'll do that sometimes. They'll show you.
Yeah.
He was just laughing at him. But it's one of those things that you're saying at ceremonies. You'll see things you don't really believe, and it's actually life-altering, because it changes your view, and it removes a lot of doubt, because, you know, doubt's not good in those ceremonial ways. You can't go in there with a lot of doubt either. It kind of nullifies a lot of things.
Yeah, your belief and your faith in it is very, very huge. And, you know, I think the spirit people see the potential in you. You just need that little, like, that little nudge to be able to be like, okay, you know, I heard these stories, but... You know, like, is there any truth? Is there any, you know, is it real? And then the spirit people will present themselves in mysterious ways like that. It would be different for everybody. And so it's really awesome to hear, like, people's experiences like that. And it's just like, you know, it really takes you out of, you know, Western living of, like, understanding what is real and what is not, you know. And then there's a lot of people out there that are, like, really skeptical about a lot of these things. It's like, oh, that's not real. Oh, that's not real. And it's just like, well, there's a lot of experiences out there in this world, and just because you haven't experienced them all doesn't mean it's not real, you know?
Yeah, that's part of their journey too, though. You know, I've come to accept that there's no provenness. You don't have to prove it to anybody. That doesn't even matter, you know?
Yeah. So,
like, for them, it's their place in this world to walk that road that they're on. And it's not for us to try to push them off that path, you know. It's theirs, and theirs alone to walk. And if they never ever have an experience like that, a spiritual experience like that, or paranormal or anything like that, that's for them, you know, and their creator, or lack thereof, to
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Experience in this life, you know, it's not our job to try and convince anybody of anything, because we know.
Yeah,
we know what's real and what's not, you know, according to us and our experiences.
That's one thing I always say in my videos too. It's just like, I'm not trying to convince no one this is real. This is for the people that have already experienced these things and have questions and want to know what they experience, and give that validity that they're not crazy. You know, give that validity that, you know, what they're experiencing is real, and, you know, how to go about it respectfully interacting with these beings.
Yeah, I mean, because there's so many, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of these non-Indigenous people that are into spirituality and things like that, they have this, I don't know how to say it, like, without being too judgmental, but they have this really naive way of thinking about it all, almost with too big of an ego. Like, they're the ones in charge of these things, and they're not. You know, it's those spirits and all them that do these things, that give you gifts to heal or to have different sorts of sights. You know, whatever the case is, that medicine, this is what we call medicine in general.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed a lot of them think, well, if I can just find within myself the balance and the power, I can do this. And it's like, wait a minute now. You know, a lot of this is really out of our hands. It's not up to us if we're ever going to, you know, hold medicine or be a part of a society or anything like that. It's really those spirits that line it all up for you to come into that. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to just hand a bayonet to a baby. They're going to test you, you know, they're going to test you. Not everybody gets to be a medicine man. I'm sorry, but not everybody does. And as a matter of fact, if you look at it, some of the people that are really ceremonial, they've been around those things their whole lives. There are some people in there that have never seen a spirit, but they're around these ceremonies all the time. And they've never seen anything. See, like, even amongst natives, just because you're native indigenous to somewhere, it doesn't mean you're inherently born with all this knowledge or anything, you know.
We're not all medicine men.
You know, we're taught, like you were saying, from a young age, and we're around it, we're exposed to it a lot, so we have a better understanding of the things that, you know, happen when they do than the average person that's never had an experience.
Mm-hmm. And then that's one thing I love is, like, one of the teachings I was given at a very young age is, like, we're giving you these teachings pretty much in the Navajo way. They tell you to walk in beauty. Hmm. And so when you walk in beauty in your life, mentally, spiritually, and physically in that way, you know, you may never experience anything, but these teachings we're giving you are just in case a spiritual being wants to have a conversation with you. How are you going to react? How are you going to conduct yourself? How are you going to represent yourself and your family and your people in front of this being? So, you know, those are one of those teachings that, like, you may never run into these beings, but still know that they're there. You know, my grandparents, they still wake up early in the morning before the sun gets up, and they always pray to the morning sun for a new day. They pray for their family and all this other stuff too. So it's like one of those things. It's just like always carrying on those teachings is something that's really good.
Yeah, in our tribe, we have societies that kind of take care of that. Mm-hmm. Like the youngest societies, the Chickadee Society, that's where you're like 0 to like 14 years old. And in that time, you learn proper etiquette at the ceremonies, respect, you know, leadership. You learn all of these things at a really young age, and then you'll go to the next society up, and then to the next, and then to the next. And each society has different, you know, responsibilities and things like that for you. But like my boy, he just made it into the Chickadee Society himself. And in that society, they have one song, just one song they got to learn. That's where it starts. It starts really small. And they got to learn. Well, they have a dance that they have to do, too, within the Okan. They have to do this dance in that lodge. And that we build like an arbor. But anyways, they have to do their part in there. And then we have the Crazy Dog Society. There's Horn Society members. Anyways, just different societies take part in that. But the kids learn it really young.
That's really good.
And the older you are, you're in, you know, you can transfer out of these societies and transfer into a new one. Or you can just transfer out completely and you don't have to, you know, partake in those gatherings all the time. But but like for us, it starts really young. And they're brought through this. But see, that's one of those things, too, is not everybody in our tribe is exposed to those.
Yeah.
And this year was a big time for my wife and I. We were, you know, pretty much fully immersed in it. And we're to the point now where we're going to be there every year. And that's why we put our boy in. You know, we made a big commitment this year to be a part of all of these things more often. Even though because I live off the res, you know, that's where the work is, you know, for me, where I live at. That's where where my business is and stuff like that. And, you know, the podcast is kind of like my hobby. And, but anyways, we made a push to go back to more of that, you know, be more involved. Because, you know, you're getting older, and who's going to take it on? You don't want it to disappear. There'll come a time in your life where you kind of have to start getting more involved, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things, is another reason why I did this whole channel and everything, was because, you know, it's sad to say, but a lot of times, you know, the younger generation just don't have the time or interest in learning a lot of this stuff, at least for my tribe.
Yep.
And, you know, this is why I did like video stuff, to tell these stories through this, you know, to kind of drive interest, like, okay, you know, there's these beings that are out there. So this is the reason why, you know, to draw interest into the culture again. It's like, okay, so like my videos might spark a question to be able to go to their grandparents and be like, hey, I saw this video about this. Can you teach me about it? Can you let me know about it and everything? So, you know, as long as, you know, that interest is kind of built, especially in the modern era, you know, through technology like this, I think might have to be one of those things that kind of help the newer generations.
Yeah, I agree. Because the more interest we can spark in them, the better for each of our nations, you know?
Yeah. And I feel you on the not living in the res, too, because it's just like, I'm living in, like, Phoenix, Arizona right now, but I'm going to be moving back here to the res here very soon. And, you know, it's just, that's one of those sad things. It's just like, you know, a lot of the infrastructure on the reservations isn't built up for a lot of younger generations to be financially stable enough to be able to support themselves. So they have to leave the res. You know, you're not around the language constantly. You're not around, you know, the prayers, or that you don't have time sometimes to go to ceremonies because you got to work, or you don't have PTO or something like that. So, you know, that's one of the things I always pray is, like, hopefully in the future, you know, our nations can build up enough to where the youth and our youth don't have to leave the res to be able to support themselves and future families and everything.
Well, there's a lot of, the lack of economy is a big one, you know, on the reservation. And in my view, from my observations, what I've seen is it's got to do with the land itself, you know, because, all right, let's just say, for instance, Nike wanted to build a factory on an Indian reservation. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. If they were to, there would be so many liabilities, so many what-ifs if they tried to do that. Because, one, it's reservation land.
Yeah.
And at any minute, the councils can, you know, punish them for whatever reason. And it's just not a good business idea for them to come in there and be able to set up like that. Now, these little small ones might have a better chance of doing it, you know. Non-natives coming in there and leasing land from the, you know, they might have a better chance of doing it. But I don't think any of the bigger businesses are willing to take those sorts of risks.
Yeah.
I just don't.
That's one of those. I always think, you know, like, we're sovereign nations. We can all be like our own Wakandas from Black Panther. You know, that'd be pretty cool if we can get there in the future. But hopefully, man, I'm always praying that, you know, we can find a way, because unfortunately in the Navajo Nation, you know, there's a lot of, when it comes to like presidential, tribal presidents and everything in our past, you know, there's been a lot of greed and embezzling, and, you know, it's just like, geez, man, it's just like, there's a lot of opportunity, but it's very, very slow building as far as for trying to build an economy on our res over here.
Yeah, that's how it is on ours. I mean, when you really think about it, we're still recovering from being forced onto the reservations and this new way of life. You know, the America's had centuries to learn this, so they still ain't got it figured out. You know, so here we are, just a little removed from that, still trying to get on our feet. You know, it's going to take time. It really is. And especially the traumas and the, because that becomes a circular kind of behavior where you come from nothing. And once you do make something of yourself, then you end up in that, I'm going to spend it as soon as I get it because I never had anything. And you get into the circular reasoning where you're not really trying to get ahead or save for the future, or even teach your kids a better way of handling the money and things like that. And that's what I see, is because with me, I was never taught money. Never, ever taught it. What I was taught is, as soon as you get it, spend it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was taught.
It was funny. I used to see a lot of memes on Facebook and stuff when COVID hit, and then Navajo Nation was giving out stimulus checks and all that stuff. So we're all just like, hey, you're just going to see a bunch of Navajos at the dealership getting cars, you know, getting new TVs and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, that's one of those things. It's just like, even though I had to leave the reservation to live in the city, you know, it sucks being away from home, but I am glad of the things I'm learning outside of the res. Learning, I guess you can say, the Western way of living, to be able to master it, to be able to be like, okay, you know, one of those things that Bruce Lee used to always talk about, take in what is useful, discard what is not. You know, you think about those things, you were able to take away the good things that you learned in the city and be able to take that back to the reservation to be able to help build the economy, help change the mindset of a lot of people, to be able to grow and help the next generation, help the children, grandchildren, help the great-grandchildren pass on that knowledge of understanding, because this way of living is not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go back to how it was, so we might as well learn how to master it, but also blend it with our traditional values and everything in a beautiful way.
Yeah, that's a really tall order, you know, and and I know it can be done too, is the thing, because if I'm out here doing it, you're out here doing it, then we can all do it. It's just a matter of, you know, breaking the chain of a lot of these behaviors we were taught growing up, you know. Honestly, it really is. And it starts with us. Now, our kids are going to be better off because of how we are. They're going to see it, see what we did. And then it'll be with their kids and their kids. But it will take time, generations, to, you know, start getting us, our people, our nations, to a better, you know, standing in the world. And geez, just in this America alone, because we don't want to be, you know, dependent on anybody. Because look how it is now. Your tribal police departments are underfunded. You know, they're underfunded and they're overworked. All your police officers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could just look at that alone, and it gets really hard on them. And a lot of times they won't stick it out because there's so much trauma there in itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's. But one of these days, I'm with you, I have hope and belief that we will be able to better stand on our own, you know, versus worrying about these funds coming in. We'll be able to do it ourselves.
Yeah. One thing I really love is the Canadian natives up there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I noticed is that, like, they have, like, their own Canadian Indigenous broadcast channels on TV. Or like that they do like cartoons in their language, and they teach songs through like shows and everything. So like little babies I see all the time, they're watching I forget the name of the kids show and everything, but it's just like, geez, I wish, you know, like every tribe would kind of take the initiative to try something like that, because just all you see these kids these days are on iPads and stuff like that, you know. So when they're learning how to say apple or banana or something like that, you know, you teach them in their language like that too. So, you know, just trying to find ways to be able to stay up to date, because it's just like, that's one of the things. It's like, you grew up on the reservation, but it is a big culture shock when you go to the city, because it's just like, there's still all these kids that don't have electricity or running water, and then it's just like, they go to school and everything. And they're like, okay, cool, you had good grades, you get to go to college in New Mexico, or you get to go to college in California. And they go out there, they're so far behind compared to everybody else who lives in the modern world outside of the reservation. So it's just like, I think, like, taking these initiatives, and I really do think maybe the next generation, because of technology, they can see the internet, they can see YouTube, they can see all these different things. And it introduces different ways of thinking. It introduces different problems, and you can solve them in different ways. So I really have hope that, because I really feel like it was my generation. It went from like flip phones to, when I was a kid, that's when we first started getting iPhones. And then now this next generation that's coming up, you know, they have like unlimited access to internet and everything, you know, unlimited data and stuff like that. So it's just like, I really do feel like they will be, you know, groundbreakers in a lot of this stuff, as far as for the ways of teaching the knowledge. And so, just like you said, you and me and other Indigenous creators that are out there, you know, we're all doing our best to be stepping stones. That's what I hope pray that, you know, we continue our tradition, we continue our songs and our ceremonies, but also, you know, you don't have to worry about food, you don't have to worry about energy or just water and all that stuff. We fight and protect for all the natural resources and everything.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be really nice.
Yeah.
Hey, getting back to some of the more paranormal stuff, I was always really interested in your stories about those thunder beings when they were helping your holy men get rid of those skinwalkers. Can you talk about some of that?
Partially, not in full detail.
Okay.
But in the old ways, in the old ceremonies, there were used to be medicinal people that could call upon help of these spiritual deities and these beings.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And so whenever they were dealing with a being that was really powerful, there were these certain songs that you would sing to kind of call upon a spiritual warrior and everything. And sometimes those songs were used for the thunder being as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ahead of time, you know, like, instead of like going in those dark tunnels and everything too, you know, you could call upon the thunder beings to be able to flood the tunnels and flood them out, and the thunder beings can go ahead and get rid of the evil spirits that are there too. So they would shoot their lightning bolts, and in that specific area, it's pretty gnarly, because like we live over there, but it was kind of a little bit distance away. We were on a hike one day and saw that. We were just like, whoa, what is this, you know? And my great-great-grandfather, he used to be a very, very powerful medicinal man. Mm-hmm. So in those stories and everything, it was said that he was the one that went against the evil in that location to kind of cleanse it out for his family and the neighbors and everything like that. So he called upon the thunder beings for help to chase away those evil beings that were there too. So you would see like where that tunnel opened up and the path that went toward the hill. And then you would see those trees that were right in front of that tunnel were all black because they got all hit by lightning and everything in that area. Well, geez, man, just walking through that history like that, you know, it was very, very interesting to just be like, you know, we're walking on a pretty much like a battlefield back in the day, you know, so it was pretty interesting to be able to see that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, another question I have that's kind of been on my mind. So you are the first indigenous person I know of that actually goes out and does ghost hunting. I'm not saying they don't exist, because here you are. So how do you, I guess I got two questions about that. How do you approach that, and how do you... I guess that's my first question, is how do you approach doing that as a native, right? Because I always see these non-native ghost hunters doing things that I think are questionable from the standpoint of my spirituality. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so a long time ago in our tribe, we used to have a lot of people that I guess you could say would go to these haunted locations. They used to be really sacred sites back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes evil would kind of come along and corrupt those locations. Mm-hmm. And so people couldn't go and do ceremonies there anymore. People couldn't go there to pray anymore. So that was one of those things that the spirits would task some of these medicinal people to go to these locations to cleanse it out.
Yeah.
To be able to make it holy again and everything. So that, in a sense, is what we used to do. That's what my brother was trained up to do and everything, and I was his brother. So, you know, I wanted to make sure my brother was safe and everything, so I learned with him, too, as well. So we were doing that for about a good 10 years before we actually started up our paranormal team investigation and all that. So it was one of those things that's just like, kind of like how you said, you know, you would watch these shows and stuff, and it would kind of really irk you.
Yeah.
About, you know, how they go about communicating with spirits. So we were just like, excuse me, I had the idea one day. I was just like, why don't we try doing that too? But we do it in our way, how we communicate with spirits. Because it's just like, when these TV shows were doing, you know, they were leading by example. So it inspired other people to go out and do that too. So that's when you kind of start saying, a lot more paranormal teams going out there and doing that.
And they were all doing it the same way. And it's just like, you guys are not respecting the location. You guys are not respecting the spirits. You know, because it's a joke. You guys are making fun of them. You're demanding these things from these beings. So, you know, we did it. It was pretty much like a double head spirit. We would go to these haunted locations and pretty much help those spirits that were stuck there.
Yeah.
At the same time, we would also film. But we would also teach people to say, okay, this is how you interact with this being. This is this type of being at this building that we ran into. So, you know, a lot of times some of them were good spirits, but were angry because of how people were treating their location, their home. Mm-hmm. So we would do a ceremony, give them offering and stuff to kind of, you know, make them happy again. And, you know, we would let the owner of the building know about that spirit and everything. And sometimes, you know, a lot of those spirits were just lost.
Yeah.
They didn't know where to go. They didn't know how to move on into the next world. And so, you know, we would assist them in going into the next world. You know, we would do certain ceremonies based off their race and religion to get them where they need to go with their faith and belief. We call upon those spirits. Like, we would always say, like, you know, the spirits, we would get the horse for them, or we would get them, you know, call upon the light to have them go to heaven and stuff like that. So it was kind of one of those things where, like, yeah, it is taboo, but it to a normal person, mm-hmm. to like a normal native, you have to learn how to do those ceremonies, because they always say, like, there's always like, hey, don't do this, don't do that. It's just like, because you're not qualified to be able to do the certain ceremony or interact with these beings, because you're just going to piss them off kind of thing. So it's just like, you know, that's why they always say just don't mess with it, because a lot of those ceremonies were starting to go extinct. Only a couple people knew about it. So, you know, we were able to revitalize a lot of those ceremonies that went to go help the spirits in the forefront. So that's why, like, you don't really see much of them at all. Mm-hmm. So that's why we created groups to be able to, in turn, help these spirits at these locations that we would go to, and as well educate and teach people the proper way of interacting.
Hey, that's pretty cool, man. When I think about it like that, that's, you know, when you, okay, so like there are things I've done in my life too, where I've cleansed areas where there was, you know, spirits haunting there. And that's the same way I approached it without even knowing that, how you guys do that. That's really odd. You know, I prayed for those spirits, even though they were scary and they were spooking us and things like that. I prayed that they get to where they need to be. And, you know, once I did that, no more trouble. Wouldn't catch them on cameras anymore. They wouldn't be looking at us, making things move, anything like that. And, you know, I had to do that three times in my life I've done that. And it was always to help them, you know, even though they were scaring us and stuff like that. And there's a point where you just got to take action, because they're, how would I say it? I always think they're calling for attention, or they wouldn't make themselves known. Mm-hmm. So they need, and I just thought that they needed help. They needed to be prayed over, you know, to the other side, because they were stuck here. So that's what I end up doing. And it worked each time. Mm-hmm. It worked, you know, it did. I was able to make an impact of some sort on them.
Yeah. So that's one of those things. It's just like, you don't see it often. And we got a lot of backlash from people from our tribe, but it's just, we never got upset, because it's just, they didn't know of those older ceremonies like that, because they're really, really old. You know, there used to be a medicinal people that used to specialize in just helping just the spirits, you know, and also doctoring people at the same time too. But, you know, there's all sorts of different ceremonies that are out there, but unfortunately throughout time, you know, they kind of were lost and everything.
So I guess another, I just thought of another question. So in our way, how we do, you know, sage, how we use sage is, really it cleans death off you. You know, like say you're at a funeral or something, mm-hmm. and you're leaving there, you ball it up and you just kind of rub yourself down with it and then you bury it. Or when someone's being buried in a traditional way, they'll line the bottom of the grave with it as well. And
yeah.
You know, we use it in different ways. We can burn it at night, but we'll have to put like sweet grass or cedar or sweet pine, something, a different kind of smudge on top of it, tobacco, you know, something. Mm-hmm. Or else, in our way, it'll actually call something bad in. You know, have the whole opposite effect of that. I see a lot of people using sage as we would use cedar to cleanse these things out, these bad things.
Yeah.
I see them basically misusing it. What are your thoughts on that?
Pretty much the same thing. One of the things that, because I went to the city, I started seeing a lot of these mystical shops and malls and stuff. They used to sell like huge bundles of sage and stuff. And come to find out that the sage that they were selling in Arizona and California was a California white sage.
Mm.
And it was actually going extinct because these corporations would kind of come in and just pick up the whole root of the sage and just cut it and just sell it for profit. And so that's why I made a video talking about that. And it was just like one of those things, just like a lot of people were misinformed about how to use sage. Like they were using it to, because when I would watch these paranormal shows and everything too, like a lot of people's first instinct was to use sage to cleanse out a demon or get rid of a demon. And it's just like, and then they would always, I would always see in the comments people talking bad about the herb, bad about that medicine. And it's just like, yeah, it doesn't work. And the thing's a piece of, you know, they'll start cussing and all that stuff. And it's just like, I didn't like how people were really saying a lot of bad things about the medicine. And it's just like, well, yeah, because you guys are using it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so in our ways too, you know, it's more for like cleansing. It's more for not like cleansing out spirits, but like I said, funerals or your energies within yourself and everything like that. You can eat it, you can boil it, and you can drink it for medicine too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's, or you know, you use cedar or like kind of like sweetgrass or something like that to be able, if you wanted to get rid of spirits and everything, that's what you would use those for. And it's just like simple things like that. It's just like, you know, it can make a big difference if you just like, hey, you know, please don't talk bad about this if you're not using the tool right. It's just like using a hammer to, you know, if you want to glue something, it's like the hammer is not going to glue something. It's just going to break it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, one more question. When you were out doing these investigations and stuff, ghost hunting, I guess we could call it. When you're out doing that, what was the most memorable time in terms of, I guess, being spooked that you encountered or experienced?
Being spooked. So I would have to say this location that we went to was the Washoe Pub in Virginia City, Nevada.
Oh.
So this one right there was, it's really renowned for having a really dark deity and being inside of there.
Yeah.
And so one of our members that were there, he wasn't of indigenous descent, but he grew up with us. So he knew a lot of, you know, the teachings and everything. And so like he we knew him since kindergarten. So like he was white, but like he grew up like with us. So he knew a lot of the teachings and stuff. So we're just like, hey, you want to come along? He's just like, yeah, I'll do it. But because of that, he didn't have a lot of the natural protections that we had when we would go to ceremonies and all those other things too. So a lot of spirits would kind of pick on him. So at this location, there was a real powerful kind of more demonic demon that was there. And we had this device that was called the SB7 Spirit Box.
Mm-hmm.
And it would change through radio frequencies through white noise. And the spirits could be able to talk through those frequencies. And in there, it was like the most clear threats I've ever gotten. And it was like saying really bad things like cut his throat, you know, kill this man and all these other different things. And so we ended up having to perform an exorcism on him at the location. And during the exorcism, you know, like we were doing the ceremony and then like the doors inside of that room were closing by themselves. The room was all shaking, kind of like stuff you'd see in a movie. And I was just like, geez, I was standing there. But like, you know, it was like one of those things. This is like, through our trainings and everything, you train for this, so you're used to it. You know, it's just like, you know, a firefighter going into a fire, you know, like he's scared, but he knows how to overcome that fear to be able to get the job done. You know, policeman, army man, you know, veteran,
knows those things too. It's just like you got to go over that fear to be able to make sure your friend, your loved ones are protected. So, you know, but afterwards I was like thinking about it. I rewatched the footage. I was like, dang, that's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, those exorcisms, they're real. They've happened in my tribe too. They've had to have been performed too in my tribe. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a definite risky take. You don't even have to be in anywhere particular to be, you know, taken over or something like that. I'll tell you one story real quick about that. So my wife's cousin, he's kind of more like her brother. He, you know, because they were raised together, he stayed behind this grocery store on our res, Blackfeet res called IGA, and there was an alley separating his fence line of all the houses going down on the block to the store. Well, these street people would walk that those alleys and stuff, you know, going from place to place. And one day he was up high because it was a two-level apartment, and he was up high and he was looking out the window, and he could see those street people walking back there. There was a group of them, but there was this one guy that was standing behind them, and he just looked funny, like how he was standing there swaying, stagger, mm-hmm. but never fall. Then all of a sudden he just stood there like he was getting ready to really dance, I guess, like he's really getting ready to dance, and he took off running. And he jumped right inside of this one lady. And when he jumped in there, her name was Wanda. He says it on my podcast, so it's okay to say the name. But he jumps in that lady named Wanda. And here, she just spun around and she grabbed a couple of them guys, threw them up against the wall, threw the other one across the alley into the fence, and just start beating them up. And he seen this, so he goes running outside to stop it and break it up. By the time he gets out there, she's sitting on the ground, like just sitting there, and all of those people are moaning and they're like all beat up and bruised and hurt. And she's just sitting there looking around like confused but crying, saying, "What happened? What happened?" And she's just looking around like, "What? Where? Like, why are they?" You know, she couldn't figure it out and she was just crying. But that's what we call an alcohol spirit jumped in there that day. And that same one has been seen around downtown in there. And one of my other friends ran into it too. And it was staggering weird. Staggered right in front of his car and like, you know, almost made him stop as it walked by. And one of my nieces seen it too. Followed her home, scared the hell out of her. But those are real things that happen. Those spirits can jump into you, particularly when you're weak, when you got no protection. Like, if you willingly just become an alcoholic like these folks were, it's easy for those things to attach to you, to control you, to do whatever they want with you, just toy with you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely seen that too here. Like, we have alcohol spirits, like drug spirits too, and everything over here. And so it's just like, you know, whenever they would kind of come up and they would ask for stuff, you know, you kind of feel something on them. Yeah. You know, like if I ever have any spare change, I would give it to them and they would reach out their hand to try to shake my hand. And I'd be like, no, thank you. I don't want to shake your hand because, you know, they could transfer things like that unknowingly, whatever's attached to them, you know, to you. So I would just give them the change and then, you know, have them go on their way and everything. So, yeah, those things are out there.
They are, man. Well, geez, Sean, I really appreciate you coming on this podcast and, you know, being willing to take time out of your day to entertain us here. We really appreciate it, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem, man. And so whenever I go to Montana again, man, I'll hit you up and then maybe we do a video together and everything because I love your stories that you have and your experiences, and I love to meet other people from different tribes, man.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to it. Definitely we'll go and do something, make a video somewhere. But, again, tell everybody where they can find you at and what your channel is called.
Yeah, for sure. So you can look me up on Sean Clun Shadow Productions on YouTube. So I'm going to be having some upcoming projects you can see, and that's going to be really exciting. But if you want to see like what I'm doing every day, channel updates, all that other stuff, you can follow me on Instagram at official Sean Clun SSP, spelled S-H-A-N-C-L-E-N, or Sean Clun.
cool, man. All right, well, thanks, man. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for having me on, man.
All right. At Sean Clan Shadow Productions. Great videos. Please check him out. Follow him on Instagram. So, in the next coming weeks, or this next month that we have coming up here, I'm going to have a few people on. I've got a schedule lined up. So I hope to have more content out sooner rather than later. But if you know of anybody that wants to share their stories or is on the fence about sharing, just send them my way. You can send me email at lodgetales@gmail.com. There's also a link where you can get in contact with me on the website at lodgetales.com. You can share there as well. Of course, you could contact me through TikTok, and it's the same. It's called Lodge Tales Podcast is what I'm called on TikTok, and you can interact with me on there, you know, whenever you want. Send me a message there and I'll get it there as well. Of course, the Facebook group of Lodge Tales on Facebook, you can join that. We'll approve you and get you in. And on there, all I really do is share some news. I haven't really been, you know, too engaged with the Facebook thing, but it's just like, hey, I'm going to drop an episode now, or I'm going to do this now, or I'm going to do that now. Why it's up primarily is for you to contact me and to be able to get in share your stories or where you can contact me. It's just another avenue, but that's available to everybody as well. So I'd encourage everyone to have, you know, share this with your family and yourself. If you want to share your stories and you're Indigenous, please, by all means, share your stories with me. We really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in, being there, and supporting the show. I guess until next time, folks, we'll see you.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.